were reviewing what we learned from yesterday's testimony by former special counsel Robert Mueller before two House committees. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 100 days after the release of his report detailing Russia's attempts to intervene in the 2016 election, Mueller took questions under oath from Capitol Hill lawmakers. Democratic Representative Adam Schiff chairs the House Intelligence Committee. In the second of two hearings, he had this exchange with Mueller.
Well, your investigation is not a witch hunt, is it?
It is not a witch hunt.
When the president said the Russian interference was a hoax, that was false, wasn't it?
True.
Did you watch or listen to these hearings? Did you learn anything new from yesterday's testimony? Did anything surprise you, or was it mostly things you already knew? Join in with your reaction, your questions, 800-642-1234. Karen Hoffman is an adjunct associate professor of political science and associate director of the Les Aspin Center for Government at Marquette University. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Well, did we learn anything new from yesterday's testimony in either of the committees?
I would say it's possible that some people watching who didn't read the report may have, you know, gained some insights. But I think by and large, they're really, you know, he really did pretty much stick to what was in the report. So to that extent, I don't think there was a lot added.
Well, let's start with him saying something that's been said in the past, that he did not exonerate President Trump on obstruction of justice charges because his office did not decide whether or not the president had committed a crime. Here he is talking to House Judiciary Chairman Democrat Jerry Nadler.
So the report did not conclude that he did not commit obstruction of justice. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what about total exoneration? Did you actually totally exonerate the president?
No.
So we see those quick exchanges by Mr. Mueller, not elaboration. So what about that gray area in terms of exoneration?
Well, that does seem to be the word of the day today in various analyses that I've been listening to about this. I think it gets confusing because you end up with sort of double negatives, or, I mean, the language is confusing. But I think that, you know, people who are objecting to that language that Mueller used would say, you know, no one has the ability, you know, a special prosecutor does not have the ability to actually exonerate anyone. And that is a fair point. But I think if you flip it around, Mueller pretty clearly said his office did not make any determination, you know, whether or not there was enough to indict or whether or not there was not. So I think his point still stands that they did not make that decision either way. But when you say he, you know, he's not exonerating him, I think legally then people get upset because they say, well, you know, Mueller can't exonerate anyone. Well, that's true. But I think the more important point is he did not, his office did not make a determination either way. So yeah,
what?
I mean,
yeah. So there we have it. Right? So what did Mr. Mueller have to say about the possibility of President Trump facing indictment after leaving office?
Right. Well, he clearly said that it is possible after he left office that he could be indicted. However, then now it's, you know, if he wins another term, he would not be out of office until after the statute of limitations runs out for that particular crime. So I guess he could if he, you know, did not win in 2020. That doesn't mean he will be, but the possibility is there. And certainly Mueller did not, he did not state that there wasn't evidence to do that. It gets so confusing because you have to keep talking about the double negatives for this.
What do Democrats risk right now if they continue on focusing on indicting President Trump?
Well, I think there are risks. You're absolutely right. The first is that, you know, opinions in the United States on, well, in general, in politics, are fairly polarized and hardened, so that it's very unlikely that people who paid any attention to these hearings, or even those who just read, you know, the highlights afterwards, changed their minds about Trump or anything that he might have done. So that, you know, I think maybe the hope was for them that these hearings were somehow going to be a catalyst and really energize and sort of fuel more public opinion against Trump. But I think even going in, I thought that that was so unlikely, because really people have already made up their minds. And certainly that's been borne out by the analysis after this. I mean, each side has gotten talking points from the hearings that they are using, you know, to claim that their side pretty much won yesterday. So there's a risk, because they really did not move the needle very much on this.
We're talking with Karen Hoffman. She's an adjunct associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Your thoughts on yesterday's testimony, 800-642-1234. Do you think it was important, or do you think it wasn't necessary? Do you think the testimony was hurtful or helpful to Democrats or Republicans? Do you think lawmakers were asking fair questions? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Rich now, joining us from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. I think the hearings were very helpful in terms of verifying that something very serious had happened in terms of an attack on America. And I do believe to move the needle, we're going to need impeachment protest marches along the lines of what has happened in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Now, we don't have one single city to rally in, but I think you are going to see the needle moving.
So can I ask you, Rich, was Mr. Mueller's testimony, his report, was that a catalyst for what you're saying here?
Yes, it was. And also, because there were follow-ups in various media, I watched Chris Wallace on Stephen Colbert last night in a more serious interview. And I was totally dismayed by how Chris Wallace characterized Mr. Mueller's competency as a witness. He focused on the witness's age and some of the performance factors rather than the deep content that was being examined.
Rich, thank you for joining us. Karen, what do you make of what Rich is saying there and the aftermath here of this testimony?
Well, I think he's right about the comments that are being directed at Mueller's performance. I think it's interesting and supports the point that there was some, you know, some serious issues and serious information that was talked about in the hearing, because to sort of not talk about that and instead talk about the witness is a way to, you know, sort of avoid some of those issues. Yeah, I think that one of the narratives that Republicans are going to use a lot have to do with Mueller himself, because if you can somehow discredit him, you know, in his performance, then that makes it easier to take less seriously what he was saying. So I think, you know, it makes sense in terms of a strategy. I mean, most people who know Mueller and his record think very highly of him. So, but in terms of how do you deal with the very serious information and, you know, allegations that were brought out, well, that's one way to, you know, move around that to something else.
Well, let's look at Russian interference in our future elections. Let's hear how Robert Mueller answered Representative Will Hurd's questions about that.
In your investigation, did you think that this was a single attempt by the Russians to get involved in our election, or did you find evidence to suggest they'll try to do this again?
Oh, it wasn't a single attempt. They're doing it as we sit here.
They're doing it as we sit here. So what does that mean about foreign interference on future elections?
It's really frightening. Interestingly, this is not new information. You know, this has been in the media and in reports for quite some time now, after the investigation. But I think that it is much different to, you know, be sitting at your television and watching, you know, someone talk about that as opposed to reading, you know, this a very, very dry report. No, it's absolutely, in the political science department, we have experts in that part of the world. And it's, they've been worried about this for much longer than this investigation has been going on. I just think Mueller's right. We have not really adequately thought of a strategy to do that. And unfortunately, in the political environment we're in right now, it's very difficult to have both sides work together, even on something that both think to be very important, which is really unfortunate.
Let's quickly here take a call. Charles in Waukesha with thoughts. Charles, hi.
Hi. My question is, how important was it when Republicans were able to trip up Mueller on the point that he contradicted himself with conspiracy,
right,
essentially equaling collusion?
Collusion. I think, first of all, it helps feed the narrative that I see playing out today some places in terms of Mueller's competence. I think that they're going to bring, you know, people will bring that up again and again. I think, frankly, he was not eloquent about that, that's for sure. I'm not sure that in the long run, though, that will have a significant independent impact on these hearings.
Well, let's pause right here with Karen Hoffman, a political scientist at Marquette. Do you think lawmakers were asking fair questions, or were they biased with a political aim? Looking at yesterday's testimony, 800-642-1234. Room for you. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're gathering reaction, getting analysis here on yesterday's hours of testimony by former special counsel Robert Mueller before two House committees. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Mueller said his two-year investigation did not entirely exonerate President Trump and that Russia would meddle again in our elections. The top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, said the hearing was the last gasp of the Russia collusion conspiracy.
This hearing is political theater. It's a Hail Mary attempt to convince the American people that collusion is real and that it's concealed in the report.
Do you think Democrats should move on here, or do you think they should keep concentrating on the president's potential obstruction of justice? Are you tired of hearing politicians talk about the Russia investigation? What do you think they should focus on instead? Join in, 800-642-1234. Karen Hoffman is an adjunct associate professor of political science at Marquette, and she is our guide on this. Let's go back to the phones now with Val joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Val.
Hey, good morning. How are you this morning?
Good.
Ms. Hoffman, how are you so quickly able to make statements that you don't believe that it made much of a difference with the American public when it's less than 24 hours after the hearing?
That's true.
Have you been out actually talking to people? Because I want you to know that it actually did serve a purpose for educate, just like Ms. Pelosi said at the end, the statements that her and the chairman gave, to educate the American people, it did, in fact, serve a purpose.
I think I agree that it served a purpose. First of all, hearing something on television is different than, you know, waiting for people to go read through a dry report. So I think it's possible that's the first time that some people heard some of that, you know, even though people who read the report knew this a long time ago. However, I do talk to many people, and you're right, it's 24 hours, but it seemed to me, even from the questions that were being asked during the hearing, that pretty much we're very divided, extremely divided. And my Republican colleagues and friends and students will say that basically this was kind of a huge waste of taxpayers' time and it was a witch hunt. And, you know, my colleagues and friends and students on the other side, you know, agree completely with you. So I think it's just very hard to push people because they're reading, taking out of it what they want to see.
Well, how did Democrats on the House committees frame their questions versus how Republicans frame their questions?
Well, that's a very good question. And it even seems there as though sometimes the questions were asked not necessarily, not all of them, so that Mueller would actually answer them. I mean, there was one representative in the Intelligence Committee who asked a number of questions, all of which were on topics that Mueller had previously said he could not address. And she asked so many of them. At one point, she said, I know, I'm just asking these so that they are on the record.
Hmm.
So I think that, to some extent, there were points that the members of the committees wanted to make in their questions.
What did Robert Mueller not tell us? Where did he hold back yesterday?
Well, I think it was very straightforward. He said at the very beginning that he was not able to talk about anything that was still being looked at, you know, by the FBI or other agencies, anything ongoing. And since we as the public don't know what's ongoing, I think that, I mean, people were seemed very surprised that there were so many things he wouldn't answer questions. And I was surprised that they were surprised because I thought he was pretty clear at the upfront that there were going to be a number of things he wasn't going to be able to talk about. Now, I suppose, depending on where you stand on this, you might say, well, he was just dodging. But on the other hand, it could be. I mean, he really should not talk about anything that's part of an ongoing inquiry yet at all either. So I think you'll have differing opinions on his decisions on what to say and not say. But I'm sure there's stuff we don't know. Absolutely.
Let's talk about the president's reaction to this testimony. Here he is.
So we had a very good day today, the Republican Party, our country. There was no defense of what Robert Mueller was trying to defend. There was no defense to this ridiculous hoax, this witch hunt that's been going on for a long time.
So President Trump, you know, felt that this is the end here. And it seemed like he was very positive about what he saw yesterday.
Well, I think this is one of the things that the hearings, the people at the hearings and then the analysis afterwards is each side wants to establish a narrative that is that makes sense and resonates with their supporters. And there are quite a few people who absolutely are going to say this is the end. This was a witch hunt. On the other side, so you have competing narratives, and it's just a question of, how persuasive, how reasonable and believable a narrative is. But you're going to have two opposite narratives that are sort of fighting each other, I think, in the aftermath of these hearings. You know, one is that, oh my gosh, you know, all this serious, you know, evidence of people trying to obstruct, the interference with U.S. elections. There's a lot of serious stuff going on there. And on the other hand, this was a big nothing. I think you're going to continue to see people pushing both of those.
Let's bring in Doug now in Rhinelander. Hi, Doug.
Hey, how are you doing, guys, this morning?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm just, I'm kind of looking back at this beyond just the circus aspect of this. Circus, which is intriguing, but there's this paradox within the Constitution, right? It's this kind of open-ended document, yet it is built upon or anchored in the history of our country and based upon the precedent that has been set. And I guess the question for your guest is, given your background, what do you see as the long-term implications of whether or not we go forward with impeachment or we don't? What do you see as, if you could look into the future a little bit, what precedent would that be setting either way?
Well, you're absolutely right about sort of the lack of maybe complete clarity in the Constitution on this kind of thing. Going forward, I think, Well, even now, I think that one of the things that has been apparent since the last time with Bill Clinton, when he was impeached, is that this seems to be increasingly a political calculation as opposed to back when, you know, Nixon, well, he never was impeached, but when there were discussions about his activities, it seemed to be that there was much more of a concern with the rule of law, and there was much, it was a less partisan divide on things. And with Clinton, I think we started to get more political, and now it seems to be, instead of does this rise to the level, it's how is an impeachment process going to help or hurt us, you know, whichever side is doing it, and does it have a chance of success? So I think that's not a terribly great trajectory, but we're in this polarized environment right now, and it seems as though every issue, there's a political calculation that underlies any kind of substantive policy kind of problem or issue.
Karen, in the last few seconds we have with you, what kind of conversations do you have in your classes about this testimony, about Mueller's report? What do your students say?
Well, interestingly, my students tend to be very polarized as well, and they are young. And so we really try to take a step back and look at things in historical context. And also, I think that their consumption of media needs to be more serious and substantive as well. I think that a lot of students are getting little notifications on their phones, which they admit to me that they don't read the articles. So I think we just need a more well-informed citizenry, and then that would help people come to their own opinions as opposed to being swayed by media narratives.
Karen, thank you for joining us.
Oh, very welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Kate.
Karen Hoffman is an adjunct associate professor of political science and associate director of the Les Aspin Center for Government at Marquette University. Just ahead, we explore how the language that politicians and activists use surrounding abortion impacts policy. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.